This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, April 6th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, Boulder's City Council met last night to discuss the formation of a library district. We'll have a recap from Boulder Beat's Shea Castle. The 74th Conference on World Affairs opens today in person on the campus of CU Boulder. We'll take a look at the schedule's highlights. As always on Wednesday morning, Chris Moore will share his commentary, Make Them Hear You. And then herbalist Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour, and then it's the Hightower Lowdown. On this morning's A Public Affair, Stacey Johnson looks into the process of debris removal from areas affected by the Marshall Fire. And then we'll re-air an interview I recorded with Dana Thomas, author of Fashionopolis. Then at 9:30, Greg Schultz will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead this morning, but first, a look at the headlines with KGNU's Hannah Stewart.
CU's Conference of World Affairs begins today. The conference features 100 speakers discussing topics ranging from art to activism. The 2022 conference will have in-person and virtual live-stream discussions. Mental health advocate Victoria Garrick, who gave the popular TED Talk, The Hidden Opponent, is scheduled to give the keynote speech Wednesday night. A second keynote speech on Thursday night will be made by Akhil Amar, a professor of law and political science from Yale University. The White House has announced the start of a program that provides technical assistance to school districts seeking to improve their energy efficiency. The administration has expressed hope to reach 5,000 schools by the end of the year, but has thus far announced its first round of awards to 8 school districts. 2 of those districts are in Colorado, one being Boulder Valley School District. According to the White House, public schools spend the most money first on teacher salaries and second on energy, upwards of $8 billion. Through the Department of Energy and the Infrastructure Investment Act, the White House has allocated $500 million in grant money toward the energy program. BVSD has a history of sustainability practices, dating back to its first Sustainability Management Plan created in 2009. It has recently released a report highlighting sustainability accomplishments over the last decade. The district released a comment saying, BVSD is thrilled and honored to be one of the 8 districts in the nation to be recognized by the Efficient and Healthy Schools campaign and the Biden-Harris administration for our sustainability work. The City of Boulder plans to launch a guaranteed income program for those in need. Zoe Schacht has more.
In March, the City of Boulder set aside $250,000 to pilot a guaranteed income program that is expected to begin by the end of the year. The program will give specific residents of the city cash to supplement living costs. Similar programs have grown in popularity across the U.S., including in Denver, where the Mile High Basic Income Project launched about a year ago. Boulder has requested another $3 million to fund the pilot. The city is also seeking partnerships to fund the program. The program that is specific to the City of Boulder and not Boulder County plans to create a community task force as one of the next steps. The task force will look into what other cities with similar programs are doing and fill in the gaps to fit Boulder better. For KGNU, I'm Zoe Schacht.
Colorado legislators want to address workplace harassment. However, the road to reform has been shaky at best. Nicole Rubin has more.
For the second time since June, a bill to defeat harassment in the workplace did not pass. Sponsors of the Protecting Opportunities and Workers' Rights Act, also known as the Power Act, spoke with the Denver Post saying that they are abandoning their current bill. They instead are writing a new bill which will be less controversial. Creating a new definition of harassment has been a challenge within the Colorado legal system. For decades, harassment complaints needed to prove the severe and pervasive nature of the harassment. The Power Act would like to drop that language, but for the second time, business and lobbyists have defeated attempts. Democratic representatives say that they will continue to push for reform. For KGNU, I'm Nicole Rubin.
Early in the morning on Friday, a person was found dead in a parking lot in the 4800 block of Pearl Street. The suspect, 21-year-old Alan Moody, is being charged with vehicular homicide, which is a Class 4 felony. According to the Daily Camera, the victim and Moody were reportedly living in the same car that police said was involved in the incident. Moody is being held at the Boulder County Jail on a $20,000 bond. Today in Boulder, there's a high of 50 degrees and a low of 31. High winds will continue today across the state, reaching up to 65 miles per hour at points. The National Weather Service issued a red flag warning for multiple counties, including Boulder County, for a prolonged period of critical fire weather conditions that will be in effect from 9 a.m. until 9 p.m. The winds will continue through Thursday. Right now, outside the Boulder studios, it is 33 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Hannah Stewart.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Boulder's City Council met last night for the first time since its spring recess. There was only one item on the agenda, and yet it was a seven-hour-long meeting. Joining me now to give the details is journalist Shay Castle. Good morning, Shay.
Good morning.
First, give listeners a general overview of what's up for consideration with this library district. What is a library district, and why are some in Boulder calling for the creation of one?
So a library district is another governing entity similar to, you know, Boulder Valley School District or the Regional Transportation District. They're a government entity with one particular task or, set of things that they deal with. This would be a library. So it would be taking Boulder's existing library assets and facilities, and they would just belong to this other government entity, the library district, the Boulder Public Library District, as well as any future facilities that they might create. The idea of a library district has been floated for at least 4 years. It's been suggested before that in the past, but the last 4 years have been a very serious focus on it because I don't know if listeners will remember, but in 2018, there were some pretty serious budget concerns with the city, although those have since been dwarfed by any COVID budget concerns. And the library was one of the things that got cut. And so various library commissions and city councils have looked at ways to pursue stable funding for the library, which is now majority funded by sales tax. As we know, sales tax fluctuates a lot with the economy. And a library district emerged as the best, most stable funding source to keep the library going. There are 57 library districts in Colorado, so they are the most common form of governance of library district, not only in Colorado, but I believe across the nation. So it's not a new idea, but it is new to Boulder. So advocates for the library have identified a district. It was in the 2018 Library Master Plan as the best way to move forward. And that is how we got to last night's very marathon meeting, is a 4 years of marathon meetings over the library district.
And I should open a parenthesis of journalistic disclosure here. My husband works at the library, and I'm a fan of libraries in general. That said, I don't have a strong opinion about the library district issue per se. So I can understand folks who look at the current library system in Boulder and say, hey, this looks pretty nice. Why tinker with something that appears to be healthy? What was the tone of the discourse during public comment last night?
Well, you certainly had some commenters saying that the library is doing, you know, okay, it's not in crisis. But I think what I see knowing the library folks is that they plan a lot farther in advance than the general public might. And by the time, by the time news media gets to something, it usually is a crisis. But they're looking ahead. And so they did sustain pretty heavy cuts during the pandemic. Even before that, like many departments, they have a deficit when it comes to maintenance and repair spending. There's a backlog there. They have long wanted to do and promised gun barrel branches, possibly a Niwot branch as well. The Canyon Theater has been shut down for a couple of years. There's just nothing happening there. The Makerspace is under reduced capacity. So is the Carnegie Library. So they're arguing that they can't even really provide what they have to the community. We have all of these places built other than the branches in neighboring communities, and we don't even have money to run them. Same thing with the new North Boulder Library. There's not an operating budget for that yet. So that's the argument on that side. But there were some speakers, and I certainly understand looking at the library and saying, yeah, it's doing all right. But there has been a long history of fighting for more funding for the library and with the city, and lots of promises that get broken. So I understand also if folks are very involved in the library, they have kind of, that bad taste in their mouth of always fighting with the city to get more money and never quite getting it, and being on the chopping block when things turn bad, they're one of the first things to get cut.
So take us into the weeds of the library district issue. What are some of the nitty-gritty points that need to be considered in the planning and execution of a library district?
Well, first I'll just say that council voted 6-3 to form a library district. That district exists only on paper. So we also have the Boulder County Commissioners, which have to vote on Thursday night to approve the same resolution to form a district. And once those two entities agree, it still has to go to the voters to approve a property tax increase. If the district does not get funding by 2024, I think they get two tries, although that's TBD if the commissioners agree to that timeline, then the district fails to exist. So it's really only a paper entity as of now. Council set a couple conditions, which is they capped the amount of tax that the district can ask for at 3.8 mils. That translates to roughly around $19 million a year, or $200 for a residential home extra on your property bill, and about $1,000 for commercial property. So that they set a hard cap on that. They also said that, you know, the commissioners and council will appoint trustees to the library district, the governing board, in the future. One of the things that is yet to be determined is whether the district will lease the building and land of the existing library facilities from the city, or whether they will be gifted to the district. It's been done both ways in a lot of other districts. So it is kind of those details that might not matter that much to voters, other than the property tax increase that are still being hashed out.
And as you say, city council voted 6-3 in favor of creating a library district on paper. The County Board of Commissioners is due to discuss the same issue tomorrow night. What's next on the agenda for the formation of a library district?
Well, that's basically it. The commission vote, and if they agree with council's conditions, then it's formed and it's done. If they don't, there's going to be a little bit of haggling back and forth, but they really only have until May to get this agreed upon, and if they don't, it's kind of dead in the water. But if they do agree by May, which it's possible they might, then the next thing is for voters to look for a ballot issue in November. There'll be a lot of messaging around that, I'm sure. It's not just as simple as a ballot measure, but as far as the public is concerned, that's what they need to look out for.
Shay Castle is the founder of Boulder Beat News. Thank you, as always, for coming on the program to wrap up city council meetings for us.
Thanks for having me.
Up next, we are going to a report by Rosanna Longo-Better. After 2 years of pandemic-caused virtual programming, CU Boulder's Conference on World Affairs is back in person. It opens today and runs through Saturday. 11 committees composed of students and community volunteers have chosen to address topics from 6 thematic areas, including art, business, human conditions, international affairs, science and technology, racism in America, and regenerative agriculture. To walk us through the highlights, KGNU's Rosanna Longo-Better spoke with the CWA's outreach chair, Robin Luff.
One that I love, racism in the U.S., focusing on the language of racism. We can't keep up. How do we be respectful and also not embarrass ourselves or those around us? So that's a favorite for me. We're also doing a story on the Ukraine. That couldn't be more important. Another story on immigration. Does it work? Is it working right now? A very important conversation. We look at it here in the United States, but consider all of the immigrants right now with the Ukraine, Syria. How are we managing this across the world? So let's see, what else could I call out? Oh, bringing young women into leadership roles. That's so fabulous. And a lot's happening on the campus with that as well. And then CU is leading into the first time ever, the UN has chosen CU, the National UN Climate Summit. And that's in December. And that is called Right Here, Right Now. And it's about human rights, climate and human rights. And so that's just going to be really exciting to bring to campus as well.
I'm speaking with Robin Luff. She is the Community Outreach Chair and Co-Chair of Regenerative Agriculture at the Conference on World Affairs this year. And we're talking about the importance of bringing regenerative agriculture theme to the conference this year, and it relates to all the other themes that are being addressed at the Conference on World Affairs, like international affairs, business, climate change, racism in America, art and activism. So can you speak about those talks that are going to be happening around regenerative agriculture and the main speakers you're bringing?
So we really want to talk about food equity. We want to talk about indigenous farming. We have a few whistleblowers coming that did go out against, you know, one worked for the USDA and went out against Syngenta and Monsanto, which is pesticides and seeds. And really, they wrecked their life. They had to reinvent themselves. We have another man coming from Berkeley that talks about frogs and pesticides. He only hires students from the BIPOC community to make sure that even if you think about slave land and Blacks working land, why can't they be the farmers? They know what they're doing, owning that land. We talk a lot about water, safeguarding the lifeblood of our planet. How can we capture water, not just in a field, but in an urban environment? Why do we rely on all this water we pump in when you can actually harvest rainwater? So we're talking on that subject. We talk a lot about soil. When the soil is rich, our food is rich, which means we are getting a health benefit. Trust me, there's no health benefit if you're eating any food that has a lot of pesticides and is not living in real soil. There's nothing in it that helps us and the microbes we need in our gut. We're talking about the silent farm. What if we no longer have birds and bees and frogs? What does that do to our planet? What about mass extinction? What do we want to stop that? Do you want to continue that? Do we want to lose our monarch butterflies, our bees? Even like termites have a real position in regenerative agriculture. We need to break up cow dung. We need to have beetles. We need to have flies. We need to have termites that break that up so all the species can get in, and that becomes healthy compost instead of what we consider cow dung. Hard cow dung. So we're going to have a lot of fun.
Social justice is extremely related to what you are saying, food justice. Mm-hmm. Is this food something justice that the students are also calling on?
Our students, they're going to live the world we leave for them. And I think it's really hard. What's picked up in the news is that farmers, they're on welfare. They're on subsidies. But you know what? When they don't have to buy pesticides and they don't have to buy seeds, their life changes. It's not as difficult to maintain. Earth works as it should. And we want young farmers. We need young farmers. And we need to tell them that you can make money. So we're currently across the U.S. buying farms or plots of land and showing the difference after a year. A tilled and land, regenerative agriculture, and a more traditional farm, who's making the money? And regenerative agriculture is making the money. So we really want the students to hear that.
I have been speaking with Robin Laff, Community Outreach Chair and Co-Chair of Regenerative Agriculture. We have been talking about the 74th Conference on World Affairs happening from April 6th to the 9th on the CU Boulder campus. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longobetter.
We go now to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You. Make Them Hear
You. This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. 47 U.S. senators said they would support the PRO Act, Protect the Right to Organize. The House passed the PRO Act last year. It is supported by Senator Manchin and Senator Angus King, plus all Senate Democrats except Kyrsten Sinema, Mark Kelly, and Mark Warner. 74% of Democrats and 40% of Republicans polled support the PRO Act. If the PRO Act passes, most Amazon warehouses and Starbucks will unionize. Quote, today, Amazon workers at the JFK 8 warehouse on Staten Island in New York voted to unionize. In doing so, the warehouse has formed the first U.S. union in the company's history. It's hard to overstate the significance of this win. Amazon is the second biggest employer in the United States, known for both its brutal work conditions and highly effective union-busting campaigns. The company has spent over $4 million on union-busting consulting, all while it reaps immense profits from hyper-exploiting its workforce. But at the Staten Island warehouse, workers defeated Amazon, close quote. This drive was not led by any of the big labor unions, but by former Amazon employees, including Chris Smalls, who was fired from Amazon in 2020 after organizing a walkout protesting working conditions. Amazon spent millions putting up anti-union signs, hiring union busters, requiring workers to attend anti-union meetings, and illegally threatening workers. The Washington Post wrote, quote, many leaders of the movement are in their early 20s. They're leaning into the nickname Generation U for union. Approval of unions is at the highest it's been since 1965, with a 68% approval rating, which rises to 77% among Americans ages 18 to 34, according to a recent Gallup poll, close quote. This generation is drowning in debt and has little to lose, is highly politicized, challenges the status quo, and wants unions to be a tool to defend their interests. The PRO Act broadens the scope of individuals covered by the Fair Labor Standards, permits labor organizations to encourage strikes initiated by employees represented by a different labor organization, or secondary strikes, and prohibits employers from bringing claims against unions that conduct such secondary strikes. The bill also allows agreements to require all employees represented by the bargaining unit to contribute fees to the labor organization, notwithstanding any state right-to-work laws, and prohibits replacement of or discrimination against workers who participate in strikes. The bill makes it an unfair labor practice to require employees to attend anti-union meetings and prohibits employers from entering into agreements with employees under which employees waive the right to pursue or join collective or class action litigation. The bill further prohibits employers from taking adverse actions against people who organize unions or strikes. The bill also protects whistleblowers. If you have thoughts on the PRO Act, you can contact your senators. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
It's now time to check in with herbalist Brigitte Mars, who brings us her weekly episode of Naturally.
Good morning. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. And one of the things that springtime brings are wildflowers. And one of the first to emerge from the earth is the dandelion. And you know what? It is one of the top five most nutritious vegetables on the face of the planet. How did we ever start thinking this plant was bad? You know, dandelions aerate the soil, meaning they make the soil more healthy for all the other plants that want to grow there. And something that farmers know is that the best place to put the garden is where the dandelions grow. So dandelion leaves are edible, and they're tastiest in the springtime before the plant flowers. I like to cut the leaves, just make a salad with them using a little olive oil and homemade apple cider vinegar and a little Celtic salt. It's that easy. And the dandelion flowers are edible too. They're high in something called lutein, which is really good for our eyes. At our house, we make dandelion flower muffins, dandelion loaf, dandelion gluten-free pancakes. Dandelions are amazing. The dandelion sap that you find in the stem can be applied to a wart. Makes the warts go away. My daughter, Sunflower, had warts on her knees, and 5 days of applying dandelion sap, no more warts. And you know, the dandelion root is also edible. It's considered very detoxifying to the liver and used for ailments like eczema, acne, psoriasis. It's also said to help clear old stored toxic emotions out of the liver and even help with conditions like depression and excessive anger. Well, that's pretty amazing. And if you roast the root, so you would dig it up and wash it and roast the root, it makes a coffee-like tasting beverage. By roasting the root at a low temperature, about 200 degrees for 2 hours, it caramelizes it and the root becomes very sweet. And you may have seen in the stores dandelion root coffee or dandelion blend. It's made from the roasted root. So the bees depend on the dandelions. One of the first pollen availables for the bees is the dandelion flower. So it is time to wake up and smell the dandelions. They are not evil. What is evil are the pesticides that people are spraying on their yards that kill the bees, that decrease pollinators, and contribute to world hunger. So celebrate the dandelions. They survive anything, and I feel that they are the ideal plant to help us acclimate to this polluted environment. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Hannah Stewart, Zoe Schacht, Nicole Rubin, Alexis Kenyon, Shay Castle, Rosanna Longo-Better, Chris Moore, and Brigitte Mars for their contributions to today's program. If you'd like to share a comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave us a voicemail at 303-447-9911. We play those messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25. Coming up next, Stacey Johnson shares an in-depth interview on Marshall Fire debris removal. That's coming up just after the Hightower Lowdown.